National Geographic's Paul Nicolin has the same challenges as any other photographer. He has to have the right equipment, find the best light, bring his pictures into focus. But his challenges are compounded by being underwater and working in harsh environments. 4 years ago, Paul Nicolin joined me to talk about his book, Polar Obsession. He's back with us today as he's in the Valley for a presentation at the Mesa Arts Center as part of the National Geographic Live Speaker Series. His latest coffee table book is called Bear, Spirit of the Wild. Paul, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me again. It's good to be back.
So what fascinates you about bears?
Everything about bears. They're intelligent. They're communicative. They're what I love most about them. I mean, every bear is an individual. But what I love about bears on a personality level is that they're the most honest, sort of trustworthy animals you can ever meet. You know, when people say, you must be so scared of bears. They're so dangerous. And it's like, well, no. I mean, they're all very fairly consistent in their behavior. You know, sure, you can surprise one and get a bluff charge. It happens very rarely. I've seen over 3,000 polar bears, 1,000 grizzly bears, and hundreds of black bears, and I've never once had a terrifying moment. But I have probably once a month or a near-death experience on a highway, or I've been, you know, mugged, or I've been beaten up, or I've been harassed by people, or, you know, people are drunk driving, or, you know, you're on these highways. And that's the world that scares me. And when I go into the bear world, I'm going into a very consistent, safe world for myself.
When you talk about consistency of bears, though, does that apply to, are grizzlies consistent with other grizzlies, or are grizzlies consistent with polar bears, etc.?
I would say there's sort of overall theme. I mean, people say polar bears are the only bear to actively pursue humans for food, and it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. People love to have these shock, fearful statements, you know, and I've never had a bear chase me for food, a polar bear. But, I mean, for sure, they're all different in their hunting techniques, you know, the different species, but, you know, in all my experiences with bears, I've never had a bad moment. But, and I mean, I've sat 3 feet away from a grizzly bear, while it's eating a salmon on a river. I've sat 6 inches from a spirit bear, a Komodo white, pure white Komodo bear in the rainforest while it's sleeping. I was sleeping up against the same tree. It's hard to put into words, but they're very, very honest, trustworthy, gentle animals.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the spirit bear, because everyone's heard of grizzlies, everyone's heard of polar bears. Spirit bear, a little more description of what they look like and where you can find them.
Sure. They're more rare than the panda bear, and they live on the west coast of British Columbia, along the ocean, on the outer islands. There are probably only 200 of them left, fewer than the panda bear. And I proposed a story to Geographic because I wanted to bring attention to the rainforest and the threat of oil tankers and Canada's tar sands oils coming through that area. But all they are is a black bear with a rare recessive gene. So 1 in 10 of them in that area are pure white. So it's a black bear that's pure white. But there are just so few of them that they are really literally the ghosts of the rainforest. You can be watching black bears come and go all day long. I mean, I sat there for 60 days watching black bears waiting for my first spirit bear, and then it was just like a ghost. It came down, this white speck started through the rainforest and came down to the river, and it was after waiting that many days, I couldn't believe I was actually seeing my first spirit bear.
Now, do spirit bears have to behave any differently? Because even you described the color, the uniqueness of them. Does that somehow reflect in their personality?
It you know, I've watched them so much now, and then there was a study by Tom Reimken who took a white bucket and put a black bucket and stuck it in the river and said, well, the fish were less scared of the white buckets. And so that's as far as the science has gone on their differences. But it does seem like the spirit bears, the white ones, have a flag on their head. I mean, there's 1 in 10. They seem to be on the radar of the other bears more. They seem to get picked on more. I just think they're noticed more. You know, they're just, bears don't have the best vision. They're on dark rivers catching salmon, and all of a sudden this white bear comes up, and it's just easier for it to be seen and to be noticed. But I think a bear is a bear is a bear.
It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Paul Nicolin, National Geographic photographer. He's at the Mesa Arts Center tonight at 7:30. You'll want to catch him as part of the National Geographic Live Speaker Series. Paul, the word that always comes to mind when I get a chance to talk with some of you incredible National Geographic folks is anthropomorphize. And that is that, I mean, when you talk about bears like that, explain to us more about how you can tell what sort of a character a bear has, what sort of a personality a bear has. Because some of us would say, well, you know, I could say oh, my dog does this, when I don't really know what my dog is thinking, which I know is different from a bear, but give us an idea of how much you've studied, how much you've learned about this.
I mean, I started off as a biologist, and I worked a lot on polar bears and grizzly bears. And so, you know, you're beaten down to never anthropomorphize. You know, you don't give them names. They're just data sets. But when you spend as much time as I have with bears, you can't help but anthropomorphize. You see, they go through all the emotions. You can see a little bear on a river with big bears being cautious and pondering and waiting and being shy in the body language. Their behavior is amazing when you sit this close to them. I had a 1,000-pound bear come charging up a river. It didn't notice me. And as it's chasing a salmon up the river, it got to within 3 feet of me and realized I was there and easily could have swatted, but he got scared, but he didn't want to run in case I might attack him. So he was now the prey. He was making me the top predator, and here, I mean, he could kill me with one swat, but he turned himself broadside to me. He puffed up his shoulders and he said, I'm this big. If you're going to attack me, you know, hit this shoulder. And so he made himself really puffed up, and then I just sat there very calmly looking at him from me, you know, 3 feet away. And then he realized that I wasn't going to do anything. And from that time on, 3 feet was a very comfortable distance for him. He would come. I'd be sitting by the river. He would come and sit down right next to me. He knew that there was no threat. I mean, I once had a spirit bear that I was 2 feet away from or a foot away from, and I was photographing it sleeping. I'll show those pictures tonight, but sleeping under a big tree. And I was clicking away, and I was so excited. I'm shooting 10 frames a second. And the bear just opened his eyes, this big white spirit bear, looked at me, and he reached out with his paw, and he went smack. He hit the camera like that. Sick of the noise. I wasn't even on its radar. Took its paw back and went back to sleep. And that was it. You know, just let me know that the camera was annoying. And so when you're that close, you can't help but anthropomorphize and just see their characters and their different personalities.
Now, you started out as a marine biologist, right? Mm-hmm. So how have you evolved from there?
Well, marine biology, polar bears, marine mammal,
right.
Ursus maritimus, you know, the polar bear. I started off loving bears and polar bears. And then I realized these animals are icons of their habitats, of their ecosystems. Polar bears represent the icy realms, the polar ecosystems. We're losing ice. We're going to lose ice in the next 5 to 10 years. You know, what's going to happen to polar bears? We're probably going to lose them. Mm. You know, the threats of oil tankers coming through the Great Bear Rainforest of British Columbia right now, tar sands shipping their oil offshore, and oil tankers that are 10 times bigger than the Exxon Valdez, well, that's home to the spirit bear. That's home to the black bears. And that's why they use them. The Yukon, where I've lived for 14 years, they're opening that up like a can of sardines right now to gold mining. So they've staked half the territory. So home to the grizzly bear. I mean, just to say, hey, don't mine here is one thing, but to say, hey, these animals live here, they're going to be easily displaced, you're going to put in roads, they're going to be easily hunted. So I have to use these animals as the sexy, charismatic megafauna that represent these habitats.
Well, Paul, how do you get across to people how important it is to preserve these certain aspects of the ecosystem? Is there a feeling that there has to be this approach that you're taking, because otherwise it sounds like, hey, I don't want to really hear about your politics per se. It's more about preserving the earth.
You know, you do need development. You do need change. You know, there is mining. You can't just wear a tie-dye T-shirt and run around saying, hey, stop it all. You know, there is going to be change. And you just have to work with people and you say, okay, if you're going to mine this area, well, how about we leave the entire intact Peel watershed alone? You've already staked this part of the Yukon, for example. Let's just leave this habitat alone. It's pure. It's pristine. It's where the caribou migrate. It's got the densest population of grizzly bears and wolf dens. Don't put roads in there. Just leave it alone. You want to mine? Mine, you know. It's same with the Arctic. It's, you know, as the ice disappears, are we going to put oil tankers through there? Are we going to put ships there? Are we going to put oil drill platforms through there? Leave. You need to have marine protected areas. And I've just started an organization called SeaLegacy.org, and it's working towards marine protected areas. These areas, we've just been working in Mexico in a place called Cabo Pumo, and the local fishermen said, let's just take 10 kilometer by 10 kilometer, 6 mile by 6 mile stretch of the ocean. Let's not take any fish. Let's see what happens. I dive in there now, and it is such an abundance of fish. You've got 600-pound groupers, you know, thousands of fish in these big schools. And the fishermen now are just fishing the periphery of this no-take zone and doing better than they've ever have in catching fish. And that's what happens when you just leave something alone. Nature will recover. It will return. We just have to get out of its way and leave these little pockets of rich areas.
Paul, in our last little bit, let's return to photography, the realm of that. Mm-hmm. How emotional is taking a good photo or taking a photo of these animals you've gotten so close to?
Do you remember that I was emotional from the last interview? I emote easily.
Absolutely. But I mean, that's. I mean, even when we think about taking photos of loved ones, mm-hmm. and I wonder, as you get closer to these animals, do they become loved ones in a sense?
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot of things that happens. Often when, you know, like for example, the spirit bear, I waited 60 to 70 days before I got my first picture of the spirit bear. To go from thinking, A, your career is over because they're never going to hire you again because you're not going to come back with pictures, to all of a sudden being 3 feet away from this bear that's accepted you, it's let you in. And you're photographing it on a wide-angle lens. You've got two strobes going. The light's beautiful. And you're not just shooting pictures that will survive the story. You're shooting images that exceeding your expectations. That's very emotional in its own right. And then you have the adrenaline of being 3 feet away from a majestic, beautiful, incredible animal. That's emotional. And then, so at the end of the day, you've had this, I mean, for me, it's my drug. It's definitely my drug. If I have one of these encounters a year and I have a series of images that capture that day, that moment, it's you know, that's just, those are the, you know, on my deathbed, I think those are the things that I'm, it's never going to be my pictures or the covers or the posters. It's going to be these memories that I've had, this emotional journey that I've had with these incredible encounters in nature.
National Geographic photographer Paul Nicklin, he's at the Mesa Arts Center tonight as part of the National Geographic Live Speaker Series. His latest book is called Bear, Spirit of the Wild. If you liked hearing Paul today, I'm sure there's a lot more to come tonight. Paul, pleasure to talk with you again.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me again. Appreciate
Thanks to Nick Bull-